This morning we read God's word in two places. First, a couple of verses from Exodus chapter 8, and then we're going to read Exodus chapter 10. Exodus 8, beginning at verse 24. Through verse 27, Exodus 8, verse 24. And the Lord did so, and there came a grievous swarm of flies into the house of Pharaoh, and into his servants' houses, and into all the land of Egypt. The land was corrupted by reason of the swarm of flies, one of the 10 plagues, of course. And Pharaoh called for Moses and for Aaron and said, "Go ye, sacrifice to your God in the land." And Moses said, "It is not meet so to do, for we shall sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians to the Lord our God. Lo, shall we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes, and will they not stone us? We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as he shall command us." Now turn to chapter 10. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Go in unto Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I might show these my signs before him, and that thou mayest tell in the ears of thy son and of thy son's son what things I have wrought in Egypt, and my signs which I have done among them, that ye may know how that I am the Lord." And Moses and Aaron came in unto Pharaoh and said unto him, "Thus saith the Lord God of the Hebrews, how long wilt thou refuse to humble thyself before me? Let my people go, that they may serve me. Else if thou refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow will I bring the locusts into thy coast, and they shall cover the face of the earth, that one cannot be able to see the earth, and they shall eat the residue of that which has escaped, which remaineth unto you from the hail, and shall eat every tree which groweth for you out of the field. And they shall fill thy houses and the houses of all thy servants and the houses of all the Egyptians, which neither thy fathers nor thy fathers' fathers have seen since the day that they were upon the earth unto this day." And he turned himself and went out from Pharaoh. And Pharaoh's servants said unto him, "How long shall this man be a snare unto us? Let the men go, that they may serve the Lord their God. Knowest thou not yet that Egypt is destroyed?" And Moses and Aaron were brought again unto Pharaoh, and he said unto them, "Go, serve the Lord your God. But who are they that shall go?" And Moses said, "We will go with our young and with our old, with our sons and with our daughters, with our flocks and with our herds will we go, for we must hold a feast unto the Lord." And he said unto them, "Let the Lord be so with you, as I will let you go, and your little ones. Look to it, for evil is before you. Not so. Go now, ye that are men, and serve the Lord, for that ye did desire." And they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Stretch out thine hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, that they may come up upon the land of Egypt and eat every herb of the land, even all that the hail hath left." And Moses stretched forth his rod over the land of Egypt, and the Lord brought an east wind upon the land all that day and all that night. And when it was morning, the east wind brought the locusts. And the locusts went up over all the land of Egypt and rested in all the coasts of Egypt. Very grievous were they. Before them there were no such locusts as they, neither after them shall be such, for they covered the face of the whole earth, so that the land was darkened. And they did eat every herb of the land and all the fruit of the trees which the hail had left, and there remained not any green thing in the trees or in the herbs of the field through all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron in haste, and he said, "I have sinned against the Lord your God and against you. Now therefore forgive, I pray thee, my sin only this once, and entreat the Lord your God that he may take away from me this death only." And he went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Lord. And the Lord turned a mighty strong west wind, which took away the locusts and cast them into the Red Sea. There remained not one locust in all the coasts of Egypt. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart so that he would not let the children of Israel go. And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch out thine hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, even darkness which may be felt. And Moses stretched forth his hand toward heaven, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. They saw not one another, neither rose any from his place for 3 days, but all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. And Pharaoh called unto Moses and said, go ye, serve the Lord. Only let your flocks and your herds be stayed. Let your little ones also go with you. And Moses said, thou must give us also sacrifices and burnt offerings, that we may sacrifice unto the Lord our God. Our cattle also shall go with us. There shall not an hoof be left behind, for thereof must we take to serve the Lord our God. And we know not with what we must serve the Lord until we come thither. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. And Pharaoh said unto him, get thee from me, take heed to thyself, see my face no more. For in that day that thou seest my face, thou shalt die. And Moses said, thou hast spoken well. I will see thy face again no more. The text to be expounded this morning is verses 8 through 11 of Exodus chapter 10, 8 through 11. And Moses and Aaron were brought again unto Pharaoh, and he said unto them, go, serve the Lord your God. But who are they that shall go? And Moses said, we will go with our young and with our old, with our sons and with our daughters, with our flocks and with our herds will we go, for we must hold a feast unto the Lord. And he that is Pharaoh said unto them, let the Lord be so with you as I will let you go and your little ones. Look to it, for evil is before you. Not so. Go now, ye that are men, and serve the Lord, for that ye did desire. And they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. Beloved of God, the Israelites have been tucked away in the land of Goshen in Egypt for 400 years now. And just as God had promised to Abraham a long time before this, that after 400 years he would come and get them, rescue them, take them out of their captivity in Egypt, now he is doing so. Remember that God had told Abraham long ago, Genesis 15, that he was going to give Abraham's seed all the land of Canaan. But first, that seed would have to be a stranger in a strange land and would serve the people of that land for 400 years. Remember how God brought that to pass. Joseph, son of Jacob, was sold by his brothers into slavery into Egypt. And then there was a famine in the land, so that Jacob and the rest of his sons had to come to get food from Joseph, who was now made prince in Egypt. And they all came, and the Pharaoh of Egypt settled them in the land of Goshen. But then a Pharaoh rose up who knew not Joseph, and he enslaves the children of Jacob, making them servants, just as God had said. Though afflicted by Pharaoh during that time, God's people grew. God is able to use a society favorable to his people to grow his church. He's also able to use a society unfavorable toward his people to build his church. But what God will not allow is for that society to destroy his people spiritually. And this was about to happen now to the children of Israel. Not that she would have been destroyed physically by this slavery and bondage, but spiritually. She's become too full of Egypt over these 400 years, enslaved not only externally, physically, but becoming enslaved in her mind and heart to the priorities and purposes of Egypt. Now it's time for the people to leave. In taking God's people out of Egypt, God not only preserves his church as he swore to do, but he gives the greatest picture of salvation in all the Bible. Deliverance from Egypt is a picture of deliverance from the bondage of sin, bondage to the devil, bondage to the world system, its thinking, and bondage to our own old man of sin. For this deliverance of the Israelites and for this picture, this greatest picture of salvation, God sends the man Moses now to confront Pharaoh. A Moses who will speak for God, be God's voice to Pharaoh. A Moses who knows that when God says, "Let my people go," my people includes the children. The theme of the sermon this morning is not without our children. Let's notice first the confrontation, second the resolve, and third the power. Not without our children, the confrontation, the resolve, and the power. In 2003, in the midst of the war with Iraq, Jessica Lynch, a clerk in the United States Army, supply clerk, was taken captive by the Iraqi army, the Republican Guard. After 9 days, the United States military sent a force of special officers to conduct a rescue mission. They invaded the prison where Jessica Lynch was held captive, and as it were, said to the Republican Guard that tried to keep her there, "Let our soldier go." Similarly, but much more significantly, of course, this is the point of the entire book of Exodus. And really, it's the point of the entire scriptures and the entire history of this world. There is a great confrontation. God says throughout the history of the world, "Let my people go." This confrontation is highlighted in the book of Exodus. You have two very clear sides, as clear as the United States military versus the Republican Guard. You have, on the one hand, Jehovah God of all the earth, and his representative, his mouthpiece, his man upon the earth, Moses, and then the Israelites, the people of God in Moses. Then on the other hand, you have the idols of Egypt, the gods of Egypt, behind which stand, of course, the devil himself. Just think of the demonic activity involved and even the worship, the religion of the Egyptians. So you have the devil, the idols of Egypt, and then you have the mouthpiece, Pharaoh, the devil's man, Pharaoh, and then you have the people, the Egyptians. And these are pictures also. Moses is a picture of Christ, of God. God's man upon the earth is ultimately not Moses, but it's Christ. And God's people, not just Israel, but the church. Back then it was Israel, but the church in every age and place. Then you have the devil, and his man ultimately is the Antichrist. Pharaoh is a picture ultimately of the Antichrist. And then you have what's called in the Bible the world, ultimately the anti-Christian kingdom. There's confrontation. And the heart of that confrontation is over this people. Whose people will these people be? Will they be part of the people of Egypt? Will they be part of the world system? Or will they be God's people in Jesus Christ? God comes, therefore, to Egypt. God comes to Pharaoh and confronts him with the command, "Let my people go. I will have this people to myself. This will be my people, my citizens, my kingdom. And they will not be Egyptian. They will be different from this world, delivered from the power and priorities and purposes and mentality and goal and view of the world of Egypt. I will have this people to worship me. I will bring them out to serve me. Let my people go that they may serve me." They couldn't serve him under the dominion and power of Egypt and their gods and their life and worldview. He will have them, therefore, unto himself alone at Mount Sinai. He will have them walk with him through the wilderness. He will have himself amongst them in that tabernacle through that wilderness journey. And finally, he will have them unto himself in Canaan at the end. Pharaoh, and of course, the forces that are behind all of this are resistant to that command of Jehovah God. Exodus 5, verse 2. And Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? Israel will be ours. They will be part of us, one with us. They will not be brought out. And who is he to think that he can take them out?" Thus God has come in the book with the display of his power to drive Pharaoh to his knees and to rescue his people. That's the plagues. 10 plagues, the number of completeness, the complete demonstration of his power into the complete destruction of Pharaoh and his host. Each of those plagues is designed to attack one of the Egyptian gods. It's part of this confrontation, this great confrontation. The 10 plagues are not chosen at random. The Egyptians served these things. Now God is showing his might over all in order to rescue, deliver, take his people out. But at this point in the process, Pharaoh will not relent. He hardens his heart. He hardens his heart against God and his people. Though many plagues already have come and are destroying his nation, this reveals, doesn't it, something of the depravity of the human heart outside of Christ and the rebellion that is centered there. And hatred for God. He still says, "Your people will be ours. They will be a part of us. I will not let them go. They will be one with us and not one with you." This is the heart of the great confrontation all history long. Whose will this people be? Will they be his, or will they remain part of this world? Pharaoh is almost rabid in his hardness, hatred of God, and desire to keep these people as part of Egypt. These plagues have utterly destroyed his country. In verse 7 of chapter 10, his advisors basically tell him, "You're crazy." And Pharaoh's servant said unto him, "How long shall this man be a snare unto us? Let the men go, that they may serve the Lord their God. Knowest thou not yet that Egypt is destroyed?" But Pharaoh's hardness has no bounds, as the hardness of men outside of Christ refuses to bow the knee to him. No matter what's going on, the consequences of sin in their lives will not, except God works. Still today, God's voice is declared, "Let my people go." And every work of the Spirit in the hearts of God's own to draw them to himself, to draw them spiritually out of this world, to grow them in the grace and knowledge of Christ, is because of that voice declaring, "Let my people go. Let them come out from among you that they may serve me." As he draws them to himself, as he puts the seed of new life in their heart in regeneration, rebirthing them into his own kingdom. As he takes them through the wilderness of this world as his children, growing them, developing them, as he walks with them, as he's close to them, in the tabernacle of Jesus Christ through his word, as the call keeps going out through the proclamation of that word, for every time we read that word, "This people will be mine, you will be mine, come out, come out." You're not one with them. Your priorities are different priorities. your mind, your goal, your heart, it's mine. One day, God accomplishes that fully. Strikingly, when you read the book of Revelation, it does it in a similar way. These 10 plagues come back in the book of Revelation, as we've learned in our Bible study this past week in Revelation chapter 8. And we'll learn even further when we get to the bowls or vials that are in line with these plagues. Again, salvation through judgment. The full reality of these plagues in Egypt come home as he destroys the enemies that want to hold on to God's people in order to rescue his people out and take them to himself. And yet, still, throughout the age, the world and the powers behind it keep saying no, keeps resisting, tries to hang on, tries to keep God's people in its own clutches spiritually, make them a part of their life, their world system. You're one of us. Remain slaves, bound to sin, bound to our view of things, bound to our priorities, fulfilling the lusts of our own hearts and flesh. And in an attempt to keep the people of God in any age, in any place, spiritually enslaved to their mind, to their worldview, to their priorities, to their sin, the devil and the world always employ tactics, sneaky and deceitful. Like Pharaoh is here. Pharaoh's trying to negotiate a deal with Moses in the text, and this is not the first time. Three times Pharaoh tries to negotiate a bargain, a compromise with Pharaoh regarding going out of Egypt. The first time was back in chapter 8, verse 25, which we read first this morning. When Pharaoh said to Moses in Exodus 8, verse 25, and Pharaoh called for Moses and for Aaron and said, go ye, sacrifice to your God in the land, in the land. Go ahead. All right, fine. Go ahead. Worship Jehovah if you think you have to do that, but don't leave. Just do it here. Just stay here in the land and do it. Let's compromise. Work with me here a little bit. Stay in the land of Egypt and worship him. God's people still hear this, don't they? You could be a Christian. Do whatever thing you have to do. Go to church on Sunday, fine. But just stay a part of us. Just be one with us and everything else. Go to church on Sunday if you have to, but tack religion on to the surface of your life, but remain part of us. Stay here with us. You don't have to leave. Spiritually, you can be one with us in a worldly way of life, way of thinking. Keep your mind and your priorities and your worldview here amongst us. It's a deal. It's a bargain that many are ready to accept. Is there anybody here like that? If they look at their life honestly, this is what I'm doing. Church doesn't have to be spiritually different from the world. It can remain living in the same sin, under the same thinking, the same mentality, the same kind of life, and just worship him. Just tack a Jesus sticker on the top of it all and change nothing underneath. It's no problem in the land. Thus saith the Lord, let my people go. Ross and Christy, who I think is listening downstairs, that's part of what you've confessed this morning. doctrines of his word in my mind and in my heart. I'm for him. I'm not leaving my mind, my priorities, and my worldview back in the land, but I'm for him. In chapter 10, verse 24, Pharaoh tries to make a bargain again, the second one. And Pharaoh said unto Moses, "Go ye, serve the Lord. Only let your flocks and your herds be stayed." All right, fine. You're not going to serve him and stay a part of us, be one with us. Go ahead, go. Just keep all your stuff here. An evil tactic to keep God's people in Egypt. Serve God with your individual piety. Serve God by going through the motions with your prayers, but not with your life, not with your stuff, not with your house, not with your bank account, not with your job, not with your free time. Keep all that behind in the Egypt of this world. With that, you will serve the world just as the world uses all of those things. Don't use what he gives you for his kingdom. Don't take it all out of Egypt unto him so that everything is pressed into his service. And of course, Pharaoh's no fool. He knows if they leave all their stuff behind, he still has them, he still has their heart. Follow the money back to its source, and there you'll have where the heart is. Ross and Christy, your confession this morning is that all your life, godly life, and everything you are and everything you have, all of it, out of Egypt, unto the Lord, spiritually pressed into the service of his name. The third tactic of Pharaoh is found in our text, and it is the most devastating one. Verses 8 and 9. Go, serve the Lord your God. But who are they that shall go with you? And Moses said, "We will go with our young and with our old, with our sons and with our daughters, with our flocks and with our herds will we go, for we must hold a feast unto the Lord." And then Pharaoh responds, and Pharaoh said unto them, "Let the Lord be so with you, as I will let you go and your little ones. Look to it, for evil is before you. Not so. Go now, ye that are men, and serve the Lord, for that ye did desire, and they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence." Pharaoh had asked Moses, "Who's going to go then?" And Moses said, "All of us are going to go, including our little ones, our children, our sons, and our daughters." And verse 10, Pharaoh's response is kind of hard to understand, but Pharaoh is mocking Moses. He's mocking him. Basically, it means this: you think I'm going to let you go with your children, your sons and your daughters, your little ones? Jehovah better be with you if you think I'm going to allow that. You go ahead and try it, and evil is before you. I'm going to come after you and destroy you, which is exactly what he attempted to do. Here's my deal. Take it or leave it. Last one. Go with your men, and you leave your kids behind. No little ones. The little ones was the issue for Pharaoh in verse 10. Of course. Not such a big deal if he lets the men go, the older ones, the adults. The little ones will grow up soon enough, and they will be enslaved to us yet. Pharaoh understands that the people are in the children. The older generation will die off eventually, but if he has the children, he still has the people. He has the generations. He has them enslaved to himself. Then, oh, how the devil and the world, whether consciously or subconsciously, is still using the same tactic today. And how often it works. Never with one of God's own, of course. Not one of them goes lost. But how often it works in generations, from one generation to the next. And how it's working in our day and age. You go ahead, Dad. You go ahead, Mom. but I'm keeping your kids. You go serve the Lord. You go honor him with your life. But don't take your children with you. You leave them behind in the Egypt of this world. Oh, sure. You maybe get them to show up to a youth event every now and then. But you leave them behind in the world spiritually. And the church is destroyed. The generations slowly but surely go lost. For the youth are left behind in Egypt. The church is in the little ones, and Pharaoh knew it. Ross and Christy, you have confessed in your vows of baptism, not without our children. And may God give you grace, and all of us who are here this morning, grace to keep that resolve and to play out that resolve. All of these little ones who are here and the ones who are yet to come, not without our children. Moses didn't hesitate, did he, in giving this response to Pharaoh? Verse 9, and Moses said, "We will go with our young and with our old, with our sons and with our daughters." He didn't say to Pharaoh, "Well, we'd really like to take them, at least some of them, at least we'll see here." "We will go with them, Pharaoh." Moses knew this is the will of the Lord. He knew that. He didn't have to say to Pharaoh, well, just hold on, okay? You've set this deal before me. I'll go talk to God. I'll go set this option before him. And we'll see what he says, and I'll come back and let you know what it." Moses didn't have to do that. He knew. He didn't have to ask God. He knew. He knew that God's covenant included the promise that "I will be a God to you and to your seed after you." And he knew the implications of what that meant. He knew that the covenant of Abraham made that explicit, as it had been explicit with Noah and with Adam and Eve. That God had said to Abraham, "Just as I am a God to you, and a God in fellowship and friendship, a bond with you, I will have that same bond of love and protection with your seed after you in their generations." Of course, Moses knew that that promise didn't necessarily mean every last one. He knew about Ishmael, Moses did. He knew about Esau. But he knew that the promise of God was to save the children of the church. That the church included the children. That the children were part of the "my people" in "let my people go." Moses himself personally had experienced the power of that promise in his own life. Dramatically, astoundingly. Moses, of course, was born into a covenant home, but was taken out of his parents' covenant home as a young boy, and yet God had preserved him powerfully by his sovereign graciousness. The things that Moses learned from his parents in his youth stuck with him in his mind and heart as he was brought into the halls of the wisdom of Egypt. He was preserved in the most unusual of circumstances. And Moses understood personally, God's covenant includes the children. I know that in my own life. And if Moses had any doubt about how serious God was about this, that doubt had been removed not all that long ago when Moses had made the trek from Midian to Egypt. Remember that Moses was in Midian for 40 years. Jethro had given him his daughter Zipporah to be his wife. Moses had a couple of boys out there in Midian. When Moses comes back at the command of God to Egypt to lead the people of Israel out, read something very striking in Exodus 4, 24 through 26. You can look it up when you get home, Exodus 4, 24 through 26. And on the way, God met Moses and sought to kill Moses because he had not placed the sign of the covenant in one of his boys, Eleazar. So important was the promise that the covenant of God included the children to be born. So important that that must be believed, that God would not allow Moses to go on without that sign of the covenant etched into the very body of his little boy. And so Zipporah had to take a sharp flint rock and cut the foreskin of Eleazar, her son, in order to save Moses' life. One of the strongest proofs of infant baptism in the Old Testament. Absolutely not. Moses did not need to go bring this before God and ask what God's answer would be. Ask him if this is a compromise he should take. He knew the will of the Lord. We will not go without our little ones. Didn't you hear him, Pharaoh? He said, "Let my people go." And they're part of my people. Not without our children. God, give us such unhesitating resolve to say to the spirit of the age, this day and every day, not without our children. We're not going to leave them behind. We're going to train them. We're going to teach them. We're going to go out of this world spiritually to worship God, live a life unto him, so that their mindset, their priorities, what they know, how they view everything in this world is all unto him. What a sad day. What a sad day for the church. If parents confess and promise one thing, but then by their very parenting, they willingly allow Egypt to keep their children. What a sad day. It is that sad day in many places, many times, unfortunately, sadly. It is that sad day sometimes in churches as a whole that say by their actions, by the way they view their children, and by the way they raise their children, though they never say it outwardly or consciously, I'm going to let Egypt form their minds. I'm going to let Egypt form their priorities. I'm going to let Egypt rule over them, direct their life. Let's reaffirm our commitment to say with Moses, not without our children. They're his. They're his. They receive the power of the life of God's people. They are to be filled with the things of God, the way of life in God's covenant. Ditches of truth are to be dug into their minds deeply, deeply. You dig more, the same line over again and over again, that deeply it inroads into their minds so that it's what they view, how they view everything. But the word of God is their life, their all. Let's resolve this morning to be the parents we ought to be the uncles and the aunts we ought to be, the grandparents that we ought to be, the church community that we ought to be, to feed their souls with the word, to pray with them as though God himself is in the room with us, to live the life of God's covenant before their face and with them, to confess our sins, our own sins, in their viewing, as though these sins have been committed against the Most High Majesty of God, to receive forgiveness and to joy in his grace, the floods of mercy. To honor his law as though it's the law of the God of heaven and earth, who's created all things and who has redeemed us and who is our Father and whose law is love for us. Reverence him as though he's holy and as though he's captivating to the core. Let's press this throughout our schools. Let's support our schools. Let's be faithful in catechism instruction. Let's be faithful in our own homes and family worship. Let's be faithful to worship together in church with our children. Not without our children when we come here in the worship of his name. They're going to worship with us and sit with us and learn how to do that. God takes up everything in our life into his covenant. He takes our houses, he takes our cars, all of our stuff, all of our possession. He takes our mind and our hearts. He also takes our children. The children had to go to Sinai. The children had to go with their parents through the wilderness. So ours. Notice now briefly that it's Moses who takes this stand. Of course, Israel is taking this stand behind him and will. But Moses, as the leadership of God's people, takes this stand, and Israel with him. Moses is, of course, an office bearer in Israel. How important that Moses take the lead in taking this stand, and how important it is for office bearers, for the minister, for the elders, for the deacons, to take the lead in this resolve in our own lives, in our own teaching, in our own preaching. How important that on family visitation, the elders come in and bring these reminders into the homes of God's people. Not without our children. What kind of a father are you? What kind of a mother are you? And we ought to receive that. We need this accountability. We need to think about this. And that's why they do it. What are devotions like in your home? How does discipline go? How are you teaching them? Are we faithful? Do you love them? And do you show it? By your parenting, do you say what Solomon said in his appeals to his son, "My son, give me thine heart"? Do you show them that you're resolved not to leave them behind in Egypt? How important that the preaching of the word preaches these things, that it reminds, that it confronts, that it encourages. If Moses fails to take the stand here, Israel isn't going to take the stand behind him. So too, if preachers are not preaching and living this way, and elders are not living this way and teaching God's people this way, it starts to go lost. May God spare us that day. Where we don't even realize it, because that's how it happens. Where we don't even realize it, but we're saying to Pharaoh without saying it explicitly, by the way that we live, by the way that we parent, "All right, I'll take your deal. I'll go. But you can have my children." God worked the resolve of Moses into Moses. God worked the resolve of Moses into Moses. And of all Israel behind him to stand like this. God worked this by his word, by his dealings with Moses in his own life to confirm that word to him. God works that resolve in us too. God himself works also through that resolve that he works to then bring our children out of Egypt with us. Be Moses and be Israel ever so resolved. If God himself does not come and liberate his people along with their little ones, their sons and their daughters sovereignly against the will of Pharaoh, they're going to remain in Egypt. And be we ever so resolved to to be so faithful. If God does not liberate us and liberate our little ones against the will of the Egypt today, they remain in Egypt. God draws his people out of Egypt. God delivers them out. Moses has this resolve from God. And though Moses has this resolve from God, if this resolve is also not God's, it doesn't work. And that ultimately, beloved, is the beauty of the text. God is resolved, not without the children. Moses is ultimately not merely a picture of the office bearers of the church, but as we said at the beginning, he's a picture of the great office bearer, Jesus Christ himself, the Christ who, as head of his covenant, says with resolve, not without the children, I give myself for them as well as for the adults. And I will not myself leave the Egypt of this world behind in my ascension into heaven until I have paid for them body and soul too in my cross. I am resolved not to leave them behind, but to take them with me to Canaan. And so I send my spirit into their hearts too, not just to the hearts of the adults. And by that spirit, I lead them consciously through the blood to the wilderness and to glory. It's under the blood of the Passover lamb that is upon the doorposts of the homes that not only the adults but the children were sheltered that night. It's through the Red Sea that not only the adults but the children pass through with their parents. Already as little ones, they go through the Red Sea of baptism, the picture of the blood of Christ washing away their sins, his work, his power, his blood. It's his resolve ultimately that delivers them. We must know that. But you know what? They must know that too. The little ones. And we must tell them that. They had to know that here in Exodus chapter 10. This is why God doesn't destroy Pharaoh right away. It's not the case that this battle, this great confrontation between these two sides, is a confrontation of equals, but that in the end, God just got the final punch. The difference between these two sides is a million times greater than the difference between the Republican Guard and the United States military. In fact, God raised Pharaoh up for this purpose, that he might show to his children his power in delivering them. As Pharaoh hardened his heart, God was even behind the hardening of the heart of Pharaoh, that he might show his power in him. Because the children needed to see the power of their God. Verses 1 and 2 of Exodus chapter 10. And the Lord said unto Moses, go in unto Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I might show these my signs before him, and that thou mayest tell in the ears of thy son and of thy son's son what things I have wrought in Egypt and my signs which I have done among them, that ye may know how that I am the Lord, that you may tell it to your sons. God saved us by sovereign might. God wouldn't let us go without you, children. He brought you out with us. Pharaoh wanted us to leave you behind, but God's resolve was also behind our resolve. And his resolve ultimately overcame Pharaoh and took you out by his great might. Children, it's his grace. It's his sovereign grace. It's his promise. It's his keeping of that promise. and his sovereign mercy, working in part through our resolve to be sure, but it's he who is resolved and who delivers. That's why you're with us, children, worshiping, growing, willingly worshiping from your heart with us as we pass through this wilderness, together on to that Canaan that is to come. He did it, my child. To him be glory, now and forever. Amen.